I did 6 seasons of drum corps and 4 seasons of indoor, and there were 5 women total who directly taught me. And it was just like, man, that can't be right. Like, there's no way that that's an accurate representation of the skills and knowledge out there. Because the more voices you have, the more it furthers the discussion, the more you get pushed to think a little differently, the more ideas get thrown out there, and it doesn't become an echo chamber of the same ideas and the same people who hire the same people who have the same ideas, and on it goes. So that was definitely a point where I was just like, man, we got to do something different.
Welcome to Femme Forte, a podcast where we celebrate women in music and performing arts. I'm your host, Amanda DeVries. Hey everybody, it's good to be back. We're kicking off this season with the one and only Lindsay Schuler, but first, a few housekeeping things. One of the easiest things you can do to support the show is to share it and subscribe. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, you can go and drop some comments and questions in the interactive feature at the bottom of the episode. You can also leave us voicemails, either with your thoughts on the show or some questions you'd like us to answer on an upcoming episode. Go to femfortepodcast.com and click the mic button in the corner. For over a decade, Lindsay has been an active visual designer and instructor with Scholastic and independent programs all over the country, including BOA regional finalists, champions, Grand National semifinalists, DCI and WGI finalists and champions. Lindsay currently serves as the visual designer for the Troopers Drum and Bugle Corps, where she completed a historic season in 2022 as they returned as a DCI finalist for the first time in 13 years. This episode is for anyone that is a drum corps fan or has an interest in visual design. We talk about her passion for visual design, the inspiration of the 2022 DCI Finals production of Voracious, and her experience in pageantry arts. It was such a joy to have Lindsay on the show, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Femme Forte. Today, I'm joined by the one and only Lindsay Schuler. Lindsay, how are you today?
I'm wonderful, thanks.
Well, I know who you are and where you're from, so go ahead and tell our listeners and our viewers who you are, where you're from, and a little bit about your background in music and music education.
My name is Lindsay Schuler. I'm originally from Michigan, but I've been in the Atlanta area for the past 4 years. And I do a lot of drill writing, a lot of visual design, for groups all around the country, all of the seasons, whether that's marching band or indoor drum corps or even NFL. that's a new fun one.
Did you always know, I mean, I know you have your doctorate in audiology, mm-hmm. but did you always know that you wanted to pursue like music and music education, like kind of like as your, when I grow up, I'm going to be,
I knew I didn't want to be a band director, and I knew that pretty early on. I was fortunate to have marched drum corps early enough that I was talking to folks who were years older than me and in college, and I was, you know, asking them like, oh, what is this like? What is that like? And kind of how they were describing the actual like formal music education. I was like, well, I don't think that's quite what I want to do. But I always knew I wanted to do something with visual design, even from the earliest of me participating in it. I was just always drawn to that. Something about it was always really fascinating to me. And that is just 100% separate from how I kind of got into doing audiology stuff and what I do and don't do with either of those now. It's been kind of an interesting ride in both realms.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the audiology part of it. So what exactly made you want to pursue that direction?
So when I was in high school, the school that I went to was like a magnet program for deaf and hard of hearing students in the district. And so because of that, they offered sign language as a foreign language credit. And, you know, my 14-year-old brain, I was like, everybody's doing Spanish, so I don't want to do that. German, they don't even really speak that much German. French, I think it sounds weird. So that left me with sign language. And so I did that as my foreign language credit in high school, and I enjoyed it. I really, really liked it. And so once I got to college, it was offered as a minor. And so I started taking some of those classes and advanced pretty far because I already had some background in it. And in the same department was communication disorders and sciences, which encompasses all of folks that are going into speech pathology or audiology eventually. And so I just enjoyed it. And I thought, you know, I might as well major in something that I enjoy. It has a direct career path, which now is a little funny that I don't really do a whole lot of it. But yeah, I just thought it was really interesting. And the audiology side was always kind of, I don't know, it just seemed more, I don't know, just interesting to me. There's a little more science and acoustics and all of that sort of stuff to it. And it's it just seemed a little more up my alley.
Yeah, and that school that you, you know, picked American Sign Language, I actually took 2 semesters of American Sign Language in high school because it was offered, and I was the same way. I was like, everybody's going to do Spanish. I don't want to do that. Yeah. But it was so much fun learning it. And one of the cool things was I used to work as SeaWorld guest services, where they essentially you sell tickets.
Yeah.
And actually, my teacher, my second semester, he was actually hard of hearing. And so he came up to my booth and was signing to me, like, you know, and me helping him. So it was really cool, because not only, of course, did I learn, you know, American Sign Language for the class, but like I got to apply it to like a real life situation. And it's really cool because even here in Austin, like, I'll see some people like at a coffee shop signing, and I'm like,
I know things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's cool, like, in the sense of, you know, even though you don't do necessarily all the audiology stuff anymore, it still like applies to music in a very specific way.
And, you know, we just finished with the indoor season, and that's probably where it applies sometimes the most, because I could have summed up my doctoral research into drums are loud. Like, that could have been the entire paper, but drums are loud. And so just advocating for using hearing protection as much as possible, even when kids are stubborn, even when staff members are stubborn and don't want to, or, you know, all of those things, it's definitely an important part.
Yes, I will admit I was a little bit of that stubborn high schooler as a percussionist myself, that for like the first, I think my freshman year of high school, I didn't use ear protection, but then I got like the Vic Firth ear protection, and then in jazz band my senior year I started using those erasers, and so I actually started prioritizing a little bit more of my hearing, because even out in the real world today, when I'm having conversations with someone like in a loud area, I'm like, what?
Yeah, didn't quite get that one.
It's really cool how everything kind of comes full circle for you. And I know you mentioned in a lot of previous interviews that you've done that you're pretty well-rounded in terms of knowing a lot of the instruments. So you started with trumpet for 3 weeks, then clarinet.
That was a disaster.
And then you moved on to quads, which I wholeheartedly respect as a quad girl myself.
Yes.
But then you also had interest in baritone, which is like a complete 180.
Yeah.
Someone who's a percussionist, like trying to learn a brass instrument.
Yeah, a lot of it came from, at least later on, came from like I just wanted to march in these groups, and I wanted to be taught by these people, and some of those instruments were the way for me to do that from a visual perspective. It was always like, oh, I need to learn to play this brass instrument so I can march this really cool thing, learn about all this visual stuff, and I need to learn how to play cymbals so I can be in this indoor group and learn from that person. So it was always like, it always felt like the music for me was visually motivated in terms of my choices of what I was playing, when and where. Obviously, you know, the music became its own joy for me and learning process, and I enjoyed it in its own right. But a lot of the motivation was originally visually based.
Yeah. And recently, this past drum corps season, I mean, the big hot ticket, like the Troopers, were back in finals, did a stellar, amazing job. As someone, I had never attended DCI finals up until that point. And so that was the year to go.
Yeah.
That was like the year to go. I mean, not only, you know, did, of course, Troopers have an amazing show, the Blue Coats Alumni Corps was like performing.
Fantastic.
It was like truly amazing. And so, you know, just like the previously released episode on you, where you talk about your ideas that you had throughout the show, as well as even in Tim Snyder's episode, he mentioned some ideas with the drum major and like the paint and the hat. Yeah. Like I thought that was absolutely brilliant. So where did the inspiration come from? Like, what was the, I guess my question is, what all happened to make that show as amazing as it did?
A lot of things just came together in a really great way. Tim did an amazing job from the very beginning of having a clear vision for what the show is, what he wants it to be. And then just everyone kind of came together to continue to make it great. It was never like, this is the product that we started with and that's the product we're taking to finals. It was a constant evolution and just an open door to ideas, talking about things. Even the paint on the hat and on his hand was really a conversation the visual caption head and I were having during spring training. He brought that up as like, that's like one of the most iconic openings to the movie There Will Be Blood, is like they're you know drilling for oil and it dips down and he like Daniel Plainview runs his hand and like kind of shoves it in that guy's face of like, there's oil down here. And so that was kind of the impetus for that moment. It was like, that, let's do that, like whatever that is, let's figure out how all that works. So it was a little bit more of Andrew's original idea, but then it kind of turned into like, hey, Lindsay, how do we make this happen? So I became the hat and paint person for a little bit. So we figured out a good way to keep paint on his hat the entire show, not have it drip on his face until he touched it at the end. So that was a cool project. I'm so glad it ended up the way it did, because I thought it like really rounded out that last moment that was already so intense musically. It just kind of brought that character into it too.
Going off of that too, every time, as I mentioned to you, you know, earlier, I was like the editor for that episode and on all the episodes. And so every time that I was like just rewatching and, you know, making my edits, like the closer was always brought chills to my back, like just because of how good, and like even being in the stands, I emotionally felt it, like the energy from the performers. So it's just an absolutely wild experience. And in turn, why I'm so excited to have you on this show, like learning so much more knowledge of all the hard work it took and learning so much more about you. I have a huge respect and admiration for what you do.
I appreciate it.
Of course. We previously met at DCI Finals. You did like a short interview with us up in the box. And I remember your initial reaction, because we did an interview of you being the first female like drill designer to have like your show in finals. And I remember I went back to that video actually. And you're like, honestly, I'm still processing that.
I don't know. Just found out myself, because so we were going, we finished our semifinals run. It was a great performance, probably, I think, the best one. And the visual staff, we were going to go somewhere, celebrate. We'll wait to hear how this goes. We'll see. And wherever we place, if we're in, awesome. If we're not, we had a great season. And as we were walking in downtown Indy, we started getting like conflicting text messages of, oh, they said this online, they said this in the stadium. And I was just like, nope, I am having none of this until I get a reliable source to tell me. Like, I'm not doing any of this rumor stuff. I'm not going to get like my feelings tossed around one way or the other. I want a reliable source and then I'll believe it. And one of the staff members there, his mom was in the stadium, and she is like a 10. Like she was a former superintendent, like we'll go by the schedule. And I was like, if she says we're in, I believe it 100%. So she said we were in, and of course we celebrated, had a good time. And then we wanted to get back because we wanted to see the Bluecoats Alumni Corps. And so I was walking kind of down in the like kind of tunnel area, and I ran into, I think it was Courtney Mills. And I think she was the one who was just like, do you know that you're the first one, like, I think ever? And I was just like, I literally hadn't even thought of that. Like, it did not cross my mind until you said it just now. And then it was like very soon after that, that we had spoken. I was just like, wow, that's a lot. And I had no idea. Like, I didn't even know that that was a potential repercussion of us doing well, was to also have this kind of be on that like record book, so to say.
Yeah.
So that it was kind of a shock, surprise, happy, strange, all at the same time.
Yeah. So kind of reflecting now that it's been some time, have some of those feelings changed now that you've processed some of that? Is it like more special to you, or how do you feel about that?
I mean, a little bit, but I don't know. It's some of it is that I like the performance itself. I've always wanted that to just stand on its own, regardless of who was behind it or wasn't. And obviously it's just so special for the Troopers organization. And Troopers overall has done such an amazing job of just making sure that everyone in the full spectrum of life is represented within their staff and admin, and everyone you see it's such a diverse group of people. And they've made a point to make sure that's the case, and make sure that the best people are in the job because they're the best people.
Yeah.
And they also just happen to be woman, person of color, et cetera, all of these things. So, it's cool. It's cool to have that, but I'm glad the performance stands on its own regardless.
Yeah.
You know, it's not special because of me. It's special by itself.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you mentioned earlier about your, you know, love for the arts and how you found your way, you know, loving the visual side of it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're taking the like designing more on like a full-time basis.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
So what was like the turning point for you, when you wanted to pursue that, I guess? I'm not sure if you were doing audiology right before that.
I was in Michigan. I was an educational audiologist. It was a part-time, like a 75% gig. But then I was also doing a lot of visual design stuff and really hands-on. So that felt like a 75% gig too. And it's like, well, there's not 150% Lindsay. Like there's only so much I can do. And it really did feel like I'm burning the candle from both ends and nobody's getting the best quality of what I can do or what I should do. So it kind of, it all lined up with that I was going to be moving to Atlanta, and that was kind of the choice, was like, do I pursue audiology down there and maybe let this band thing kind of chill in the back burner, or do I let the audiology go and go full force into visual design?
Yeah.
And so that was when I made the call, and I'm happy I did. It's been a ton of fun. It's been unique. It's been challenging in all sorts of different ways. And I do some substitute teaching in some of the schools that I actually teach and write for. And so I get to see some of those kids outside of band class. So it's like, hey, tenor saxophone number 2 in biology class. So that's its own unique fun thing too. And I've kind of crafted a little bit of my own version of my job, which not everybody gets to do. And that's unique.
And now, a word from our sponsors. Femme Forte is sponsored by Ultimate Drill Book. UDB app modernizes marching band. Spend less time, have more fun, and achieve at a higher level. Just upload your drill from Pyware into the UDB app, and everyone in your band gets animations with your show music, precise pathways, synced music, notes, props, and so much more. It's just easier. Head to ultimatedrillbook.com and use code FEMFORTE when you order to get 20% off UDB app Pro. Yeah, and one of the things I've been dying to ask, not just you, but like any designer in general, like, where did y'all learn how to even design? Is it just something that you just start and you just kind keep of getting good at it?
Or? Yeah, kind of. You know, it's even to this point, like the first stuff that I wrote was in 2010, 2011. And now I watch that and I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's so bad. And like all of that, you know, just seeing even how much I've grown in that time. But it really, for me, it came out of just opportunity and necessity. So I was working for, an indoor drum line in the Michigan Grand Rapids area, and they just kind of needed somebody to help finish out a show and teach visual. So I was already there teaching. They needed someone to finish out the show. It's like, well, that makes sense. And so I continued on into the next year, and there was a marching band I was working with, and they were small, and they just needed someone who was going to be there to write and kind of take ownership of all of it. And so I just kind of grew as they grew, and then joined on with Legends, and then got a few more drill clients. And so a lot of that has been just kind of learning as I go and asking questions, taking advice, watching and listening a lot. I think that was probably one of the things that I took from my high school band director. He's really, really into jazz. And he would always tell us we needed to listen a lot. Like, listen to anyone, listen to everyone, just listen to jazz. You'll understand so much more just by intake. And as I was like, I'm going to not do that, but I'm going to take that idea and apply it to drum corps. And so I watched and I listened a lot, even to the point where, like, there's a good span of like 20 years that I can be like, oh yeah, this show, that show, got this place, this is the score, this was the venue, you know, like as like an encyclopedia, just because I watched and listened so much. And there was just so much that I could learn from doing that. And I kind of then applied that to when I was marching. So marching certain places, getting taught by certain people, I knew that that was something I wanted to pursue. And so that made me just lean in that much harder when we're learning the drill. I'm not only learning my dot, but I'm looking for why and the how, and oh, I see that person's going over there, and now that opens up the form for that feature over that way, and just kind of like just looking harder, which, you know, that I was able to do that because I did so many years of drum corps. Because if you're doing just 1 year, you're just trying to survive. You don't know what's happening day to day. You're just trying to be out there and fly under the radar. But by the time that I was like really into it and already writing drill, that was my fifth and sixth year of drum corps, mm-hmm. or indoor. And so I was able to do the day to day enough that I could do that little extra thing. And I was even writing drill for a high school while I was on tour with Crown. So any downtime, like I finished my lunch early and I'm on my computer writing some high school drill. So it provided its own challenge and perspective, and it just kind of made me think differently even while I was in the moment, which was pretty cool.
So you would say that your entry into it was like kind of self-taught, or did someone like kind of take you under your wing and kind of show you the ropes slightly?
Not exactly. I would say it was pretty self-taught in the beginning, especially just trying to figure out how pieware works, or figuring out how to do staging live. I mean, there was no formal mentorship or anything. It was just the people who were teaching me at the places I was marching. I just watched and tried to figure out their why of like, okay, I see the pattern here. I see why this exists this way. So informally they were my mentors without really knowing it. But then now more recently, the drill writing community is small and welcoming, and you know, I could call up someone and say, hey, can you take a look at this for me? What do you think? What would you do differently? And there's so many people that are amazing designers who would be like, do this. Why did you do this? Lindsay, come on. You know, and they would give me that real feedback, which is great to have.
Yeah. And I think that's really cool that in general, that the community is really supportive. I believe that you mentioned on a previous podcast that you were on, it was on a water break, you mentioned something specific about what are we doing to help the next generation? Because at some point we're all, you know,
going to be old.
Exactly. We're all going to get older and, you know, no longer be here. And so that really struck with me because there's a quote that I kind of live by, and that's a little bit of the purpose of this podcast. It's it talks about when you've gotten to a certain place in life, you don't build a higher fence, you build a longer table.
Right.
And I think that's something that's super special. And I'm so glad to see that within the community that's doing that. And again, like this podcast is like, I am not only bringing amazing women here to share their story, but also just talk about their experiences and their life and any advice that they have, hoping that someone down the line can listen and use that information to help prepare their careers forward.
Absolutely.
So kind of turning tables a little bit, obviously this podcast is not only to share you and your story, but talk about some of the important conversations surrounding the community and the industry that we're in. So are there any experiences throughout your life and career that struck out? Is there any barriers or any struggles that you've had to face?
I mean, fortunately, I have been around people who were always opening doors for me. So there's definitely, there were opportunities for there to be more barriers than there ended up being. And I don't know, you know, is that solely credit to them? Is that because I'm just going to push and I want to be in there? Is that a combination of everything? Was it just fate that it all worked out? Yeah. I don't know. But I think the only time that I was just like, man, that's disappointing, was I was going to a critique one year, for drum corps, and I was going with the guard caption head, who is a guy. And so the two of us are going to this visual judge, and the visual judge looked at him and started talking drill and the marchers need to do this and the battery, and then looked at me and said, the guard needs to be doing this. And we just kind of like, he and I like looked at each other like, we see what's going on here. Like, girl must color guard, boy must march. And it was just like, I hope that changes. Yeah. And thankfully I haven't experienced anything like that in quite a while, but those things still exist, of just those stereotypes of what you should do and get pigeonholed into doing, or even on the visual staff side of things, that, oh, all of the girls must be the choreographers and all the boys are doing the marching. And it's like, no, actually we have a pretty well-rounded staff, and we have some of the guys doing a lot of the choreography, and we have plenty of women who are out there teching feet. And, that it's just, you don't have to live inside whatever that small box is. And the more we live outside of that, the more people realize that there is no box.
Yeah. One of the things I heard you talk about on the show called On the 50 was talking about how important representation matters, and how, you know, when students see, you know, not even women, gender aside, just like themselves, yeah, through visual staff, through design staff, like, it's really cool to see a part of them represented in different areas of staff, of different areas within the organization. Is that something when you're teaching at, you know, whatever drum corps you're at, or whatever, mm-hmm, high school, is that something you kind of try to advocate and incorporate in your daily career life?
Yeah, I mean, it's some of it. I mean, it's not in a way to like check the box sort of a thing. You know, you never want to have that like diversity hire. It's like, you have the right people for the right job, and they end up representing the full spectrum of humans, because that's what it should, you know, that's the most true. But I remember it was a while ago at this point. WGI put out this like Women Crush Wednesday, tag all of your women instructors. And I was like, I had five. I did 6 seasons of drum corps and 4 seasons of indoor. And there were 5 women total who directly taught me. Mm-hmm. And as a percussionist gone brass player, back to percussion. And I know that experience could be different for different people in different drum corps, in different sections, but like, I could think of 5, and it was just like, man, that can't be right. Like, there's no way that's an accurate representation of the skills and knowledge out there. Because the more voices you have, the more it furthers the discussion, the more you get pushed to think a little differently, the more ideas get thrown out there, and it doesn't become an echo chamber of the same ideas and the same people who hire the same people who have the same ideas, and on it goes. So that was definitely a point where I was just like, man, we got to do something different. Was around that point, and that was kind of early in my drum corps teaching career. And thankfully, it seems like people are making more of an effort to understand that, and it's not just the good old boys club everywhere. Sure, some of that still exists. That takes a while, but as you see more staffs getting posted, you see a lot more of just different types of people coming from different places, different backgrounds, and being able to contribute and be present for their students in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, I very much agree in the whole, like, not just being like a diversity check. Actually, on a previous episode with Kendo Santos, we kind of talked about, like, no, we're hiring this person because they're the best person for the job.
Yeah.
And that's certainly something like that I see myself in a lot of times, as a woman and as a woman of color. There are a lot of times where, like, I want to feel the same way. It's like my gender, the different categories that I fit minority in, that's not my complete identity.
Right. It's in so many ways, it's such a small part.
Right.
But it's still there.
Exactly. So it's like, of course, like, there's so much of it, you know, to be celebrated, but, like, of course it doesn't make who I am. Like, I want to be known as, like, I'm the best person in X, Y, and Z, you know, position because of the talent that I bring.
Right.
Before we wrap up here, I do have one last question for you. Actually, two last questions for you. Who do you want to be, and what experiences do you want to create?
So broad. Who do I want to be? I want to be someone that can bring joy and life into these marching arts communities. I want the students to be able to feel that. I want to be a person to them that, like, they could text me about their problem getting into college. You know, I'm a person too. Like, I don't just write drill. So I want to create and cultivate a place where people feel welcome to be themselves, to explore, to create, to have discussions. And then in the end of the day, we can create something really cool together. We don't have to agree on everything. We can still be dissimilar in a lot of ways, but we can still come together. So I guess I just want to be a person who facilitates those ideas. What was the second one?
What experiences do you want to create?
I guess that's a little kind of one in the same.
Yeah.
You know, because those experiences kind of shape, I guess, the environment, and the environment shapes the experiences. So just always being authentic and encouraging others to do the same and create really memorable opportunities for students and just keep pushing what's possible and, I don't know, help make some magic.
Awesome. And then the last question that I always ask all my guests is, knowing the knowledge that you have now, what advice would you have told yourself as that trumpet, clarinet player moving on percussion or brass player turned designer?
You know, I think that version of me would be really, really happy and really proud of everything that's going on so far. And I think everything along the path has shaped where I am now. So I really wouldn't change a thing. Like, even, you know, would I go into audiology knowing that I wasn't going to use it as much? Yeah, because that took me to this place that made me meet this person that kept me here and got me to X, Y, and Z. So, you know, you can always look at things in hindsight and, you know, the retrospective, but it all shapes everything like a beautiful little puzzle. So I wouldn't change a thing. Just keep going.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lindsay, for being on the show. And where can our listeners and viewers find you, whether that's website, social media?
yeah, you can, I have good old Facebook, Instagram. I can't get into Snapchat. I have a TikTok, but I don't use it. I would say my Instagram and Facebook are probably the best places and most representative of what I put out there in the world.
Perfect. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Femme Forte. Femme Forte is produced and hosted by me, Amanda DeFries. Music is by Humans Win. To learn more about our guests, sponsors, and get more resources, go to FemmeFortePodcast.com and follow us on social media at FemmeFortePodcast.